Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 9. It's recorded Sunday and Monday, July 24th and July 25th, 2005. This is the podcast that gives you the ground-level view of the life of the road warrior. This week, though this road warrior is on vacation, this is actually the second vacation podcast. The last Travel Commons podcast was from Geneva, Switzerland, on the first day of my vacation. And this podcast is from Budapest, Hungary, on the last days of my vacation, bookending a 2.5-week vacation in Europe. Since leisure travel has been my life for the past 2 weeks, that's what we're going to talk about this week. Specifically, the topics today will be, what does it take to downshift from business travel to leisure travel? What are the differences? And then comfort in brands, a bit of a continuation, some additional thoughts on a topic that we covered from the last podcast, Travel Commons Podcast number 8. Again, some updated thoughts, experiences over the last 2 weeks. And then finally, what do business travelers take for granted? Well, this week, coming to you from the bathroom of the Budapest Marriott overlooking the Danube River in the Hungarian capital. Actually, it's my room that overlooks the Danube, not necessarily the bathroom. But I think you guys probably figured that one out. Like I said, finishing up our European vacation, we spent some time in the Savoy region of France. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. We caught two legs of the Tour de France, the ones that ended and then started the next day in Courchevel. This was my first time seeing the tour, and I was just astounded by the scale. I'll tell you, the only comparison that I can use, that I can provide for my U.S. listeners, is just to think about the Kentucky Derby moving around the southeast U.S. for 2 to 3 weeks. That's the closest thing between all the caravans and all the hoopla. That's the closest thing that I can come up with. I'll tell you, it was a great experience, and I'm glad we were able to see it. And then just heard tonight, of course, that Lance Armstrong ended up winning his final Tour de France, which was made seeing this one a little bit special, especially because the first leg that we saw in Courchevel was where he retook the yellow jersey with his charge up the mountain there. It was great. Well, anyhow, after that excitement, we flew to Hungary for a vacation with my wife's family. Spent the start and the end of our time in Budapest with 5 days in between out in the Lake Balaton region, a recreational area in western Hungary. My wife's aunt and uncle have a lake house in Alsóerzs on the northeast corner, or northeast shore of the lake. And from there, I'll tell you, we ended up driving about 1,000 kilometers, 625 miles, just sort of touring the area. Transition music and sounds in today's podcast are from the Budapest street festivals that I ended up recording with my iRiver over the past week and a half. Follow-up items from the last Travel Commons podcast, the first vacation podcast. First of all, as always, thanks to the listeners who sent me notes and left comments on the Travel Commons website. That's www.travelcommons, travelcommons.com. Under the show notes for podcast number 8, I left replies to each of your comments. Niels Jepp, and I apologize right now to Niels, for my probable butchering of your last name. but Niels, who I'm guessing from his email address is from Germany, sent me a note responding to my observations on security at the Brussels airport. As you may remember, I commented on having to pass through security in Brussels even though I was in transit. And I was wondering if that had anything to do with the London transport bombings that had just happened. And I also observed that I felt that the security was, quite honestly, a bit too lax for my taste. Niels writes, security has gotten a lot tougher in the recent years, but not overly so. He says security has always been taken seriously here. Brussels is a little easier than Germany or, say, France. They usually don't make you take out your notebooks, your notebook PCs. While in Germany, you have to do that. A friend of mine, he says, once had to remove her shoes and belt in Hamburg But personally, he says that's never happened to him. If you remember, in the last podcast, I mentioned that the metal detector beeped in Brussels, but it hadn't beeped on me at O'Hare. Neil's thought is that, as he said, metal detectors here, and I'm sure in the U.S. as well, have a random generator built in. So even if you have no metal on you at all, it may still beep. This is what probably happened to you. Neil's makes some good points there, and I appreciate the note. Taylor Baldwin dropped me a note and pointed me to John Stossel's book, Give Me a Break. I think John is a correspondent with ABC News, or at least he used to be. Taylor writes, hey, it's a pretty interesting read, but I thought about your podcast when I started reading about some of his rants on the TSA. And I will say, I will get a good rant every now and again. Stossel writes, Taylor says, TSA hired thousands of extra screeners and doubled or tripled their pay. In short, our tax dollars. When you throw lots of money at a problem, things usually get better. But competing private companies would have done it better and cheaper. Watching the mob of government workers, Stossel says, at some airport security checkpoints suggests TSA stands for thousands standing around. I'll tell you, I do not disagree with some of those points. Also, thanks to those who added votes to our worst U.S. airport poll on the Travel Commons website, we now have a four-way tie among Newark, O'Hare, LAX, and Denver. Miami, Florida, and Oakland, California actually each received write-in votes. Jeff from South Portland, Maine actually left a write-in nomination for Indira Gandhi Airport in Delhi, India. Jeff writes, the international terminal has no bathrooms or food shops after the security cordon. So if your bladder is not completely empty, risking, of course, dehydration, you're likely to be crossing your legs before boarding your plane. And if you have not brought enough fluid and sustenance to wait out the usual delays, you're also out of luck. You know, and geez, I thought Kansas City setup was bad. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for that comment. So here's our first topic. What does it take to downshift from business to leisure travel? I'll tell you, experienced travelers have a method, a cadence, an approach to most efficiently get them from point A to point B, and quite often then from point C to point D and perhaps E and F before finally returning home. And that's just it. The mechanics of travel, the walk through the airport, the hotel check-in, is a means to an end. Seen this, done that. Let's move through it quickly. Nothing to see here, move along. However, I'll tell you, this is not business as usual for my 11-year son or my 8-year-old daughter, or even for my age-not-to-be-revealed under pain of death wife. They don't have an efficient cadence. They haven't perfected the security line disrobing unpacking maneuver, reduced it down to the minimum number of motions through quite honestly constant practice. They don't know how to spot spectators on moving walkways, groups who spread out across the walkway rather than standing to the right and stopping to look around rather than walking briskly to their gates. And even after I consciously slowed my pace through O'Hare on our way to our first flight on this vacation, my wife pointed out to me that I was 3 to 5 paces ahead of her and the kids and that they were race walking just to keep up. Physically slowing down, breaking the well-practiced rhythms, is hard. One technique that I use is to abandon my wristwatch on vacation. This is not an idea I came up with sort of a priori, but rather I sort of stumbled into it after I started wearing a Lance Armstrong Livestrong bracelet. Now, I know it seems a bit trendier. Actually, now it's probably a bit passe. But my kid's kindergarten teacher died of colon cancer last year, and as part of a tribute to her, all of her alums, my daughter and son amongst them, bought and started wearing Livestrong bracelets. Now, I just thought the world of Natalie. I thought she was a phenomenal teacher and that she was taken much, much too young. And so I bought one also. And wearing it on my left wrist, it kept getting tangled in my watch, so I ditched my watch whenever I wear the bracelet. Usually on the weekends or on vacations. Now, I usually have my mobile phone with me, so I'm not completely without a timepiece, but it's now a conscious act to check the time. And without a watch to glance at, I find the day takes its own rhythm, and I sort of fall into it rather than me driving it. And this is important because when traveling on business, the schedule is everything for me. My arrivals, my meetings, my meals are all choreographed for maximum efficiency. Get in, get the work done, get back home to the family. But on vacation, the travel is the end, not a means toward an end. And the family isn't back home. They're here with me. And quite honestly, they're trying to enjoy the very things that I'm usually trying to minimize. And I wouldn't be completely honest if I didn't say that even after ditching my watch, there's a day or two of gear grinding between my family and me while I work to shift from a business cadence to a leisure cadence. You know, and for some reason, I just can't downshift in airports, no matter how hard I try. Last week, flying from Geneva to Budapest, we took EasyJet. Now, I've never flown them before, but they're set up like Southwest. And looking around, I noticed that other people had boarding group letters on their boarding passes, and we didn't. Oh man, having spent time on Southwest, I know what that means. So I immediately got into line to try and get us a spot in the first boarding tranche. I mean, we had checked in 2 hours beforehand, and we should have been in the first tranche. The line was going nowhere, and I'm starting to get impatient. My wife starts waving at me. Now, what does she want? Can't she see that I'm fighting to keep my spot in this queue? She finally comes over. Well, it's all taken care of, she says, because the kids were pre-boarding. Okay. I step out of line, take a deep cleansing breath, wander over to the jetway door, and board with my family. Second topic, a update or a continuation on a topic from the last Travel Commons podcast, comfort in brands. Now, in Travel Commons podcast number 8, I talked about looking for safety in travel and booking a brand, that the value of the brand to the travelers is really safety, reducing the variance, reducing the risk of a bad experience. However, there is a cost for that safety, that insurance. On business travel, where the schedules are tight, that safety from disruption, I think, is usually worth more than for a leisure traveler who has typically a more flexible itinerary. And of course, now that's coming out of your pocket and, you know, not the expense account, cost starts to take a higher and higher priority. You know, I'm a pretty regular Hertz customer, and I like their service in the U.S. and have had only really sort of a handful of bad experiences with them, which, you know, is pretty good for most car rental companies. However, when I was looking for a car to rent last week here in Hungary, their prices, the Hertz prices, were just over the top, 88 euros or $105 a day for really sort of a smallish intermediate car, and I couldn't quite tell, you know, did that also include collision damage waiver, which I just find traveling overseas is saves you a lot of hassle. So, you know, when I looked at it, took that, extended it out for 5 days, I mean, that was going to be the biggest single expenditure of our whole trip. Not exactly what I had in mind. I ran through the other name brands, Avis, Budget, Alamo. They were a bit lower, the last two more so than the first one. But, you know, still, the numbers were surprising me. So I just I did what everybody does. I popped open the laptop and I hit Google with Hungary rental cars, and I found Fox Auto Rent at fox-autorent.com. For 25% less, they had lower collision damage and theft deductibles. They would deliver and pick up the car here at the Marriott. I didn't even have to go and see them. And they tossed in the Hungarian motorway toll sticker for free. I'd never heard of them before, but the deal was good enough and the price was right that I was willing to take the risk and reach out beyond the comfort of a familiar brand. Sunday morning, guy shows up in the lobby with the keys to a brand new Citroen. We completed the paperwork over a couple of cappuccinos in the hotel lobby, and we're on our way. I'll tell you, it absolutely beats Hertz Gold Service. And I highly recommend these guys the next time you're in Budapest. You know, and there's another way that people will step away from the safety of a brand, and that's a personal recommendation from a trusted source. I'll tell you that we're not any name brand hotels in Lake Balaton here in Hungary. And so, you know, where were we going to stay? We couldn't. There were enough of us that we couldn't pile us all into my wife's aunt and uncle's lake house. I guess we could have slept out in the backyard, but not exactly what we were looking for a vacation. I'll tell you, we ended up with a great apartment. It was the second floor of a house, two bedrooms, full kitchen, sitting area, and the full use of a brand new in-ground pool, all for $50 a day. You know, hearkening back to another topic from last week's podcast, you're using technology to find non-brand hotels. And I talked about that when I was finding looking for the hotel in Courcheval in the French Alps, which, by the way, turned out to be a great hotel, the Hotel Altaport. Again, another hotel that I would highly recommend. Very nice people who run that. But anyhow, when I talked about how I was using technology, how we use technology to find that hotel. I'll tell you, for finding this apartment in Bulletin, there was no technology, and we had something better. We had the personal recommendation of my wife's aunt and cousin, the aunt's daughter, both of whom are much pickier than either my wife or I. No need for a virtual web tour when we've got them telling us this is the place you want to be. Now, that's not to say that I didn't use any brands on this vacation. I'm recording this from the Budapest Marriott. Our nights in Geneva were at the Novotel downtown, and the car we drove from Geneva to Courcheval was from Hertz. However, it seems easier to break from brands with leisure travel, especially when the price is right. Just a quick observation. Pulling into the Budapest airport last week, I noticed a large number of low-cost carriers. We flew in EasyJet, but there was also Wizz Air, Air Berlin, another sort of, Italian low-cost carrier. Just a whole bunch of brightly painted, brand-new Airbus 319, 320s. With names all ending in .com. It wasn't my imagination either. A recent KPMG survey that I read here this week says that 15% of Budapest's air traffic is now through budget carriers and is expected to grow to 35% by 2010. That's a good-sized number. I did notice, though, that none of these low-cost carriers used jetways. Instead, they were all parked way out on the edge of the tarmac, just in a line, and they bussed their passengers to and from the planes. So, I don't know, I guess the wages for bus drivers are cheaper than those for jetway operators.
Az Egoston zenekar játszik. Ördög Bomba című lemezről.
Today's last topic. What business travelers take for granted. Business travelers, especially the road warrior subspecies, live in a bit of a cocoon, quite honestly. The corporate travel offices take care of the mundane things. Hotel and airline status provides special treatment to and from. And in emergencies, there's usually someone in a local office close by to help take care of things. Even when traveling in foreign countries, distributors or business partners will help sort of smooth out the rough spots of such trips by providing local expertise. The business traveler turned leisure traveler, though, can be surprised at the effort needed to fill in those missing services when they're needed. At the end of our tour, last week, our tour of the Bulletin region, I'd driven our Fox auto rental car about 1,000 kilometers, about 650 miles. Driving back five blocks from turning in our car at the Budapest Marriott at 2:30 on a Friday afternoon, a motorcycle messenger ran into me, tore off the front of the rental car. I'll tell you, this story could be its own 20-minute podcast, and I'm not looking to relive the experience, so I won't go into all the details. But suffice it to say that my situation just changed in a flash. Literally a flash, a five-second flash that it took the motorcyclist to rip off the front of my car. I had to be at the police station, the Budapest police station, at 10 a.m. Monday morning to provide a statement. I had to return a now immobile rental car, and I had to find a Hungarian lawyer pretty quick. The first task actually was made easy by the Fox Auto Rent guys. The return guy came over, helped us get a cab to take our luggage back to the Marriott, and he took over responsibility for the car. No noise, no recriminations, he just took care of it. I tell you again, these guys, highly recommended. The second task was a bit dodgier. My first call was to the U.S. Embassy, but you know, they didn't really know what to do. They said they only get involved when U.S. citizens are arrested. And, you know, at that time, and still am, and I was luckily a free man. Luckily, though, I had a meeting at 5 p.m. on Friday with the head of a Hungarian outsourcing company. I had just run across somebody that sent me your contact information and an email just as I had arrived in Hungary, and I traded notes with her. I said, geez, I'd like to get together and hear about what you're doing. I had a great meeting with her in spite of the previous couple of hours or the activities of the previous couple of hours, and at the end, I described my plight and asked for a recommendation for a lawyer. Edith whipped out her mobile phone, started dialing. Within 15 minutes, she gave the phone over to me, and I was describing my situation to a lawyer who would meet me outside the police station on Monday morning. I'll tell you, a business traveler wouldn't have sweated these details. You call your travel department or your local business contact, and you move on to the next meeting. I remember one time I was driving down the Kennedy Expressway on my way downtown to Chicago when a rental car just died. It just stopped. I luckily had enough momentum to roll it off to the side of the road. Whipped open my mobile, called the travel manager, who told me, look, lock the keys in the car and take a cab to the downtown Hertz location. She'd have a new car waiting for me, and the Hertz person would be ready to pay my cab fare. Obviously, as a leisure traveler, you don't get that sort of service, at least not most leisure travelers. Well, I'll tell you what, everything worked out fine today. It was today now I'm talking to you Monday night. And a big reason that happened was because of Rita, the Hungarian lawyer. And the way that I found her was through a business connection, a little work that I had sort of on a whim mixed into my vacation. Some good luck that helped mitigate at least some of the bad luck of getting smashed up by a messenger. If I hadn't been willing to cheat on my vacation a little bit, mix in a little business with pleasure, I'm not quite sure if this story would have come out as well. And another personal recommendation. And if any of you guys need a good lawyer in Budapest, give me a call. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 9, the last of the vacation podcasts. I'll be back in the U.S. this week and back in the saddle, back in the business travel saddle. So the podcast should resume their regular weekly schedules. I hope all the new subscribers enjoyed this, and I hope all the new and the old or experienced subscribers stay subscribed. Hey, I appreciate any comments. Again, I appreciate all the comments you guys have been leaving, both on the podcastalley.com comment board, which I check every couple of days, as well as I really appreciate the conversations we're getting going on the travelcommons.com website, travelcommons.com. And also, you can shoot me notes like Niels and Taylor did, directly to comments@travelcommons.com. Take care, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.